Solomon wondered about life's profit. It's a word that means what is left when everything is spent. What is left when the experience is over, when the life is ended, when there's nothing left to look at? What is left then? Bibles out, turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. This morning we are going to continue through this book of Ecclesiastes. It is Solomon's journey into the world. He did good as a young kid. He prayed for wisdom. God was so pleased with him when his dad died as he took over his kingdom. And for quite a while he instituted and led the people in the ways of the Lord. But then he began to marry lots of different wives and political alliances. And when he got older, he decided he could probably find life out there in the world. He turned away from God, and he used all of his resources. He was, extremely wealthy. He has obviously great power. Israel was at its zenith. And he had this wisdom that God gave him, but he wasn't using it. And so he spends, I don't know how long, an inordinate amount of time running in the world, chasing down every dream of man. And then he keeps a record of it, which we have this book. And he goes about trying to find out what life under the sun, that's his big phrase, or under heaven, is all about, using all of his resources. So these are his observations and his experiences, his questions, ultimately the answers that he will come to both temporarily and permanently. But this morning we want to just look at the first 11 verses of chapter 3 as Solomon goes from one thing to the other, and today he considers the times of our life. Now I want to read with you the first 8 verses. To everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance, time to cast away stones and to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from it, like now, a time for gain and a time for losing, a time for keeping and throwing away, a time for tearing and then sowing, a time for silence and then to speak, time for love, a time for hate, time of war and a time of peace. If you were born when I was, you probably recognized the song. It was written actually by Bob's dad, Pete Seeger, in the late 50s. But I think the popular song was put out by the Byrds in 1965 or so, when I was just a pup, really small. But this was more than just a quaint song to the preacher. The word Koheleth means someone who is gathering together information. He has been looking at life. In fact, until chapter 2, verse 12, Solomon was out there experiencing life. He threw himself into it. And if you read those first couple of chapters, that's what you hear. But in verse 12 of chapter 2, he thought, well, why am I going to have to go through all this? How about I just sit and watch some other people do it and not pay the price? And so he began to observe life as he found it, rather than always experiencing it. So here's his take on the seasons of life. And then he gets to verse 9 and he'll question his observations. And finally, in verses 10 and verse 11, he makes a good conclusion. Now, you wish he could just stop there and get back to a relationship with the Lord, but that's not the way Solomon operates. He gets out there, he goes, oh, I should be back there where God is, and then he dives right back into the world again. So a lot of this, you know, surfacing and resurfacing only to kind of go back down to the depths. But he will say in verse 11, at the conclusion this morning, God alone can make everything beautiful in its time. Now, if you've read ahead or you've read these verses, you probably notice the word time. It is repeated 30 times. We are creatures of time. Time constrains us. It influences us. We are constantly aware of it. There's no stopping it. It marches on. It waits for no man. I think if you've been stuck at home for these several months, I'm sure you're starting to mark down how long it's been. Queen Elizabeth, one of the last words she said before she died was that she would give away all of her possessions just for another moment of time. You can't own it. It dominates your life. Once you lose it, you can't recover it. It's something you're constantly aware of. I got up this morning. I haven't got up this early on a Sunday morning for quite some time, nor have to do three services. I've been just doing one. So I'm sorry for you guys that are coming later. I'm not going to be here because I'm only up for one of these, you know. I think it was Herbert Spencer who wrote that man is always trying to kill time, but time will eventually kill him. And that's just the way it goes. That's how we live, right? The earth rotates around its axis 365 or so times a year. We live from cycles, sunrise, sunset, another day, 24 hours, 60 minutes in an hour. Science now is all about microseconds. We keep calendars, or you have them on your phones, or there's a, you know, something beeps and you have a planner, there's appointments, we have alarms. We are dominated by time. There's an alarm right there. Nah, you're good, don't worry. You can do whatever you want right now, it doesn't matter. According to the most recent survey that I was able to find online, you can spend 6 months of your life sitting at a red light. Imagine that. Makes you want to run them, huh? 8 months of your life opening junk mail. Accurate. I don't know. Maybe it's just a time killer that some college kid in his dissertation went to get. But look, you can spend 2 years of your life trying to unsuccessfully return phone calls, 4 years of your life doing homework. That seems a little short to me. 5 years standing in line, 20 years working, 23 years sleeping, if you live to be 70 and you get your average amount of sleep, 2 years dressing, 4 years being sick, 5 months tying your shoes. 5 months of your life tying your shoes. Get some loafers. Just slip your feet in there. You'll save a lot of time. And time is very elusive, isn't it? It really does depend on how old you are. When you are young, time creeps by. I don't know if you remember high school, but high school vacations, to me, when you got 3 months off, seemed like forever. We're like off forever. Forever? When you get a little older, time kind of walks by. And when you get in your 60s and 70s, time just runs by. We just had Easter. Weirdest Easter we ever experienced. But God is good and the tomb is empty, so it's not that weird. I heard that story of a man who went to the doctor for a checkup, and when he went back to get the results, the doctor said, "Well, I have bad news and I have terrible news. Which ones do you want first?" He said, "Well, just give me the bad news first." And he said, "All right, you have 24 hours to live." "What's the worst news?" He said, "I was supposed to call you yesterday." When Moses, I know it's an old joke, in Psalm 90, verse 12, when Moses wrote that psalm, he said, "Lord, teach us to number our days so our hearts can gain wisdom." In other words, make sure that the time that we're given, we use well. So how can you make the best use of your time? And according to Solomon, in his wisdom, in his quest, he will conclude in verse 11 by saying that in opposition to time stands eternity. And if you can factor eternity into your time, your life will mean something. It'll matter. Because you're kind of stuck between time and eternity. The minute you stop breathing, eternity starts. Well, you're in eternity in technical sense, but by comparison, you are still locked into this place called time. Now, in the 8 verses that we read this morning, there are 28 kind of life activities. 14 of them are very positive. 14 of them are negative. They are set in juxtaposition to one another, which almost looks like they cancel each other out. In Hebrew poetry, it's called parallelism. Hebrew poetry doesn't rhyme words like we are used to. It stands thoughts into either comparison or in contrasts. And the greater the contrast, the greater the impact, if you will, of the Hebrew poetry. So this is called antithetical parallelism, things that stand in opposites to one another. And notice as you begin that these are things that are under heaven, verse 1. It is all about life here where time runs things, where God does not necessarily have to be involved, but at a place where the Lord calls us to be involved with Him. These are activities. This is the balance of life. This is the stuff of life upon the earth. This is in terms of times in our culture. But for Solomon, it is a life out there without God, and that's what he's looking to find. It is only when he draws his conclusion through observation that goes, yeah, this is not good, unless there's more to life than this. So look at the comparisons, beginning in verse 2, a time to be born, time to die. Every minute, 358 babies are born, every minute. Every minute, 208 people die. And this verse becomes a reality for literally 560 lives. To God, there's a specific time for you to be born. There's a specific time for you to die. There's the balance. You're born, and then you die. And your birth and your death are not an accident. From God's point of view, they are an appointment. Only believers can see it like that. I don't think any of you chose when to be born. I know if you have a baby towards the end of the year and you need a tax write-off, you hope they'll come before the 31st. Come on, baby. But you really can't choose. There's no pre-womb kind of control. You have no control over the beginning of your life. There's really no control that you have over the end of your life unless you step beyond the boundaries that God has established for man. Paul wrote in Hebrews chapter 9, it is appointed unto man once to die, and then will come his judgment. David wrote in Psalm 139, verse 16, your eyes see my substance even when they were yet unformed. In your book, it is written of me, the days have been fashioned for me, even though I've seen none of them. You see, God has a plan. And we know that as believers. When it comes to our time, God is very much involved. You can not choose the day you're born. You cannot or should not choose the day you die. However, you can choose the day you're born again. You can do that today. God calls every man to believe in him. Jesus said that to go to heaven, we'll need to have a spiritual rebirth, and that's a choice that you can make. And maybe today that's your day. Born once, die twice. Born twice, die once. You can be born again, eternally so. But there's a time, God has a time. When you come and when you go. We read that there's a time to plant, and then there's a time to pluck up what is planted. Pretty good terminology. We can understand that in farming terms. There's a time to plant and fertilize and aerate and cooperate with the seasons. You know, you don't go out and plant in a snowstorm. You don't reap unripe fruit. There's a time for these things. A time to plow it under, a time to pull it up, a time to replant. Time. Verse 3 tells us there's a time to kill, and then there's a time to heal. That might bother you, the verse, and the way that it is written from an ancient Israeli point of view. Capital punishment was found in their law, and there was a time for judgment. But there was also a time to deliver, to make new, to start over, to give another chance. There was an end, if you will, and a beginning in the time that we are given. Your bodies physiologically replace their cells every 7 years or so, except for your brain cells, unfortunately. So every 7 years, it's a new you. Fortunately, you have memories of the old you, so it's still you. That's the good news, or maybe not. There's a time to break down and a time to build up. You can write across there, demolition, construction. Every November, if you've ever noticed, or December, cities decide it was a great time to rebuild infrastructures. Roads get tore up. It's always towards the end of the year. And the reason is, so often cities lose their annual funding if they don't spend it. So they wait till the last minute and then they go about trying to get the funding that they don't want to lose. We build, but things wear out. We tear them down. We replace them. Look, that's true of your body, isn't it? There's a time when you grow up and your muscles get larger and your bones stretch. And then you get older. And all of that stops and you start heading in the other direction. You start to lose your height. Your discs compress. You shrink. Your bones weaken. You begin to slouch. I have a picture of me right there. I know you guys have seen the TV there, maybe if you... But I have that up there just so I don't do this. Because this is what I have this terrible... And that doesn't look good to anybody. Feels good to me, actually. This is much better. But your body just kind of goes... You can say that you're slowly shriveling away. You hit your peak in your early 20s. After that, it's downhill, buddy. It's imperceptible at first. But you'll notice it as you approach mid-age, and the words on the page will get smaller, and the steps on the stairs will get higher, and the distance to the mailbox is further, and people's voices get softer, and your ambition begins to go out the door. Well, you get the picture. It isn't easy to grow old. When I was a young man, I honestly could eat 10 times my body weight in donuts and not gain an ounce. Now, if I have a glass of water, 10 pounds. COVID-19 has become COVID-31 in my house, and I'm not sure why. Time to break down. There's a time to weep, and there's a time to laugh. There's a time to mourn. There's a time to dance. Look, lots of emotions that control time. God has given us a wide range of emotions to handle a wide range of life's experiences. Remember, Solomon's just sitting back taking notes. This is his observations with the wisdom that God gave him, though he wouldn't apply it to himself. He saw it to be so. There are some muscles in your face that only work while you're laughing. Probably should laugh more, not less. It's good for you to laugh. It releases tension. But there's also a time to weep. Happens in everyone's life. My dad used to say to me, big boys don't cry. It's a lie. But I got what he was trying to tell me. We have lacrimal glands that work pretty well. And if you start bottling them up and nothing gets out, you know, it's going to create havoc to your nervous system. There's a time to cry. Now, look, I'm in my 60s, and I have a lot of friends that are pastors that are in their 60s, and I've watched some of them, they cry at every service now in the pulpit. And then I was saying the other day, oh, you got to stop this. I'm not sure it's appropriate every week, but you'll have your times of crying because that's how time works. Same is true for mourning and dancing, and you'll get a lot of that in your life. And I thank the Lord that most of us get more dancing than mourning, and I think we would prefer the dancing part. But notice the words, there's a time for that. There's a time for that. Have you ever laughed at the wrong time? Nervous response. When we work with the police department, at least for years, and it's a little different now because everyone's got a camera and they watch every move you make, but it used to be when there was real tragedy that you were called out on a call for, police officers would oftentimes joke with one another or laugh. They weren't happy with the situation, but sometimes you just have to handle your emotion. You don't know what else to do with it. It'll break you if you don't kind of shake it off. But you can laugh at the wrong time. I remember laughing when I was sent to the principal's office in junior high school and somehow got me 3 days off. I laughed at the wrong time. There's a time to cast away, verse 5, stones, and a time to, again, gather them. If you go to Israel, you'll, I think, understand the verse. There are rocks everywhere. There's an old Jewish legend that when the Lord handed out the rocks for the world to an angel, he stumbled in Israel. And I think that couldn't be too far from the truth. You plant in Israel, you spend literally months just digging up the soil and getting rid of the rocks. But the minute you go to terrace your land for irrigation or build retaining walls, you'll have to gather them and use all those rocks again. And that's the way life works, isn't it? gather them, throw them away. Time to embrace, a time to stop. A welcoming time and a time of departing. A time to hold on, time to let go. Seasons of life. For some parents, it's a joyful time when their kids grow up and go. For others, their kids never seem to leave home. Not good either. It's time. Let them go. Times of life. A time to gain, time to lose. Sounds like a stock market quote. A time to gather, a time to scatter. And that's the way life goes, isn't it? Time goes forward. You go one foot forward, two steps back, new job, new start. Start back at the top, start at the bottom. There's just time for everything under the sun. That's how life is on the planet in this world. Time to keep and a time to throw things away. You pack rats, read that verse. A time to throw things away. Unfortunately, I'm just the opposite. You'll never accuse us if you come to my house of storing up and gathering stuff. I've had a practice, learned from my dad when I was young. If you haven't used it in a year, get rid of it. Unfortunately, that doesn't always work because there's stuff you need like every year and a half. So I've got a lot of new things. I've had to buy more than once. But that's the way life is, isn't it? There's a time to tear and a time to sow. There's a time to fix things and then just to give up on it and replace them, you know, let them go. Lay them down. It's a time to be silent and a time to speak. Oh, man, if we could learn that. We usually get that one all wrong. There's a time, verse 8, to love, a time to hate, a time of war, a time of peace. As a culture, we sing peace songs and protest roar, but the Bible would say, in some ways, in the world, there's an appropriate time for both. A time to hate and a time to love. David, in Psalm 139, talked about hating with a perfect hatred those in the world who hated his God, that he just couldn't tolerate those whose attitude towards the Lord was such. William Wilberforce, who was brought to the Lord by a drunken slave trader named John Newton, when he came to the Lord, wrote Amazing Grace. You remember that song? Wilberforce hated the British slave trade. He was determined when he got saved that if his one goal in life could be accomplished, he wanted to rid the world of slavery. And through his life, he went after it. In 1833, he got the law passed 3 days before he died. But he and Lincoln had a lot of in common. Lincoln, you know, writes of watching the slave trade in New Orleans and being so infuriated by it, he said, if there's one thing I can do in my life to do to get rid of this, I will. Time to hate, time to love. Time of war, time of peace. Look, there are certain places in the world that should not exist without war. Dictators oppress, war corrects. So stand back with Solomon, just look at the world around you. 28 categories of experiences in life, driven by, controlled by, overseen by time. And yet, in many ways, they kind of seem to cancel each other out. There's one of these, and then there's one of those, and we end up with zero. So the way life goes, the balance, you know, we can't usually control, but there are offsets, if you will. Everything has a time. But watching this balance of life, it caused Solomon then to ask himself, well, what good is this? Where does this lead? What does this bring? And so his questions were produced from his observations, verse 9. He says, what profit then has the laborer from all from that which he of in which he labors? In verse 20, he will ask, where does it get him? In verse 22, he will say, who's going to teach him about that? How does this lesson apply? Now, we can't take those last two questions until next week, but we'll address this verse 9. What profit is there in this? And this is the third time in this book early on, if you're taking notes, that Solomon wondered about life's profit. It's a word that means what is left when everything is spent, What is left when the experience is over, when the life is ended, when there's nothing left to look at? What is left then? And Solomon, I think, observed the cancellations of experiences, the 14 good, the 14 bad, the net being emptiness, zero, unfulfillment. Unless God steps into time, unless God is involved. So verse 10, this is what he says. I have seen the God-given tasks with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made, God, everything beautiful in its time. And he has put eternity into their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. For the first time in this book, although we're going to see it often, Solomon inserts God into his thinking. Now, we told you that he uses a word for the Lord that just is the general word for God. Not the fellowship with God, but just the general word for God's existence, that great power out there that's really impersonal. And that's the only word that Solomon during this time uses. He doesn't have that intimacy with God, but he knows God, and he had that relationship before. So he mentions the Lord here. In fact, he mentions him four times in two verses. And with God inserted into the question, he comes to a far different conclusion. It isn't any longer just a time that ticks by and leaves you with nothing. It is simple. Life without God makes no sense. It's cruel. It cancels itself out. Everyone is subject to the same experience. Without God, life is a series of polar events that can only be survived by trying to balance the good with the bad or vice versa. If you have any hope of getting through it at all, it's all about survival. Oh, it's going to get better. Times are going to change. Things are going to go in your direction. You know, you got to take the ups with the downs. You've heard all of them. The same selling point. It's all I can do with time. And yet when the Lord enters your life, your picture of time instantly changes because according to verse 11, God now infuses or injects your understanding of eternity. In fact, factor in eternity. God's plans for eternity can make your time here glorious, purposeful, meaningful, blessed. But he has to be involved. Or else you're reduced to what everyone else sees, a time that stops here. But, notice verse 11, he has put eternity into our hearts, except no one can find out God's work from beginning to end. Or if you will, in order for this to have meaning, you're going to have to really trust him because we're going to have a faith relationship with God. We don't know all that he's up to, what he's doing, what the end is from the beginning. In fact, as we learn to trust him and obey him, then we can begin to experience life and the time it gives us in a remarkable way, the way that God intended. In all of the seasons of life, we'll see God involved. All things work together for good to those who are the called according to his purpose, who love the Lord, who walk with him. Now, it differs, doesn't it? Everything changes. We can live by verses 1 through 8 and despair of its balance and of its cancellation, or you can live by verses 10 and 11. You can determine that God has chosen a path for you. He is the Lord over eternity. That depending on your choice, you're either going to answer verse 9 with, this is frustrating and empty and unsatisfying, and what really profit is there? Or you're going to get down to verse 10 and 11, and you're going to decide that God has a plan. And because he does, I can live my life accordingly. You put the Lord into the equation. You seek him. You know his will, you find his heart, you pursue dependence upon him, and all of the seasons of life now take new meaning. They matter. The day-to-day will be more fruitful and worthwhile. Medical science can add years to your life, but only Jesus can add life to your years. And he'll do that. And Solomon was able to see that. Unfortunately, he dives back under the covers for 9 more chapters. And we can't drag him out no matter how hard we try, but he's going to try everything once. If you don't factor the Lord in, verse 10 will tell you that life is just a task that has to be endured. I just got to get through it. Grit your teeth. But God has placed an eternal desire in every heart. And the reason he's done that is so that you may not just stop looking here, but you might look beyond the seasons of life and you might look up. God has placed a hunger for more than this in the heart of every man. Life will only make sense. There will be only beauty found in life when you begin to serve him. And then God will take your experiences and the times and the events, and he'll make them beautiful. Everything is beautiful in its time. The word beautiful is the Hebrew word for appropriate or fitting. In other words, things will make sense. Things will begin to come together. I've had a lot of people call the church, and what's God doing? And by the way, if anyone says to you, what's God doing, just do this. I don't know. How do I know what he's up to? How come we have to? How come? They get so upset. We should riot. Really, is that what you do? Because God has lost control, you think? He's a good God. He has purposes. This is a time of life. It's weird. Unplanned. Never seen this in my life. But, hey, man, I'm rejoicing in God. Look at us. We're here today with face masks on. What a weird-looking group. I should probably take a picture of you guys. You all right with that? Okay, if you don't want your picture taken, cover your face. All right, wait a minute. Let me see. Oh, wait. This all. I don't know how to use a phone either, apparently. Oh, there. Hey. All right. Okay, we'll do this. Oh, yeah. That'll be the Facebook right there. That'll be good. How weird is this time? But God isn't it fun to know he's in charge? Praise the Lord. I don't know what he's up to, but he's up to something good for you as well. So, if we look at our situation and we isolate ourselves from him, we're constantly going to be in that position of, why does this happen? Why does this happen to me? So random, so meaningless, so absurd. But that's like picking up a jigsaw puzzle piece and trying to figure out what the puzzle's all about. Right? You look at one piece. I grew up in a Dutch home. There was always a jigsaw puzzle on a table somewhere. We still have it in our house. Kids come over, they like to do it, grandkids. You know, it's always been there, but you can't get, if you put 3,000 or 4,000 piece puzzle out, you can't tell by one piece what that puzzle, they'll say, what's the picture gonna look like? It looks like this. No, we gotta keep our eye on the Lord who sees the big picture. There's beauty in it. So look, God takes every piece of your life and he uses them for good. If you go back and read Joseph's story, for years, he suffered without having any explanation as to why. He did the right thing at every step. Sold out by his family, accused of crimes he didn't commit, spent several years in prison, alienated from everyone that cared for him, finally got to meet his brothers and find out what they were up to. I mean, he could have for years just went, what in the world is my life all about? But he kept his eyes on the God who was good and was able to say to those who would take from him, God meant this for good. He had to keep his eye on the Lord. Though he wouldn't realize it until later. Beauty in your life, in the times of your life, will only be found when you trust him. Else life is random. Somebody's lucky, somebody's not. Someone has an easy time of it, and somebody doesn't. You can't put it together. You don't understand it. Why does it work out this way? I think it was Warren Wiersbe who wrote years ago that life is like a doctor's prescription. The chemicals they give you might kill you unless they blend them together in a way that is wise. And now they heal. And God has a way of doing that in your life as well. That's how God works. Notice in verse 11, God has placed eternity into the heart of every man. Animals are satisfied when their needs are met. Man is not. Man is restless. He asks questions, he wants answers. God has made you to ask and wonder and seek because it is easy to settle for what the world offers as the best answer, and it is never the best answer. God's ways are right because time will wipe out man's best. So Solomon has restlessness in his earthly quest. He has this eternal kind of hunger that hasn't been addressed. It was St. Augustine who wrote, thou hast made us for thyself, and our hearts will be restless until they find their rest in you. So look, verses 1 through 8, life has a observable balance. Verse 9 would say, well, then what's the purpose in it? And the answer is found in verse 10. Those competing experiences are designed by God to bring you to a place where you want to say, there's got to be more to life than this. And nothing temporal will then satisfy you. So when you get the Lord in the picture, when you set your sights a bit higher, life under the sun becomes life under the S-U-S-O-N, not S-U-N. Eternity will be found. You try to live without him, spend your life without him, and it's just going to leave you with emptiness. The worse you'll feel as you shove into your life empty kind of temporal solutions that only God can satisfy. So spend your life on something that will outlast your life. Take a lesson from time as it passes. There's more to life than this. Amen? All right, let's pray. Father, thank you this morning for your word to us, how good these verses are, and in focusing our attention again upon, Lord, the way that we spend our days, realizing that there is a balance in life. People suffer and rejoice. There's an up and a down, and yet that's not really what you have for us. You want to be involved and place a stamp of eternity upon our every experience so that it drives us closer to you and it doesn't allow us to settle in this world. If this morning you don't know Jesus, that really is the key. Without a relationship with him through his son, your life is reduced to the best that life has to offer on this level, under the sun, under heaven, down here. But the Lord has done in your heart something marvelous. He's given you a restless heart that wants more. And until you meet the Lord, you'll never really be able to settle in. You can make lots of decisions for yourself. Think, this will make me happy. Think again. God's ways are eternal. They are attached to forever. And he has sent his son to redeem sinners like us, that if we call upon his name, he will come live in us and readjust our focus. If you're home listening by the internet, there should be a notification there at the bottom in the tagline, wherever you are, that will allow you to click on and find some Bible studies and some support and some answers for how do I get saved? How do I ask the Lord into my life? If you're here this morning, we'd love to pray with you after the service. So Lord, may you give to us an understanding of how time works. We're all aware of the first 8 verses. I think we all understand how life works. Some of it we love, some of it we hate. But may we get to verse 11, where you are the Lord of time, as you draw us day by day to eternity. In Jesus' name.
Well, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and rating our podcast. You can visit us on the web at morningstarcc.org and on our YouTube channel at morningstarcc. Again, that's at morningstarcc. If you'd like to support this podcast, please look us up at patreon.com/morningstarcc. Again, that's Patreon, patreon.com/MorningstarCC.